Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation,
it's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast, brought to you by our great friends at MyBookie. Obviously, this weekend, guys, March Madness has been front and center. I hope you've already been signed up for an account at MyBookie so you were able to take part in all of the action all weekend long, all the craziness, all the madness. But if not, it's still not too late. The Sweet 16, as I am speaking right now, is not quite set. About half the field is set, but we're getting there, guys. So if you want to jump in on all the Sweet 16 actions, things are really heating up. Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four, National Title Game, go ahead. It's not too late. Sign up for a brand new account at MyBookie. Just use our promo code UGA, and you'll get a 50% bonus on top of your first deposit. All right, guys, I am your host, Tyler, and man, it was a busy week in the world of Georgia athletics, and I'm here today to recap really all of it. We got a lot to get to today, guys. I know that spring practice is very much still in effect, still going on. We just got through week two of spring practice. We actually did not have a scrimmage yesterday like we typically do, but we had the coaches clinic, which I usually go to. I often go to that. Was not able to make it out there this weekend due to a scheduling conflict, but I do know quite a few people who were in attendance, and I've already tapped a few of those sources. I want to hear back from a few more. I was busy this weekend with baseball at home, men's tennis at home, lots of stuff going on here in Athens. So I've heard from a few people, but I haven't had a chance to tap all of my sources. But so before I do the full-on recap of week two of Georgia football spring practice, I want to talk to a few more sources so I can bring you guys some more comprehensive information. There's some things that we go ahead and talk about today based on what I've already heard, but again, I want to make sure I hear from a few more people so I don't have to come back on here later, then we can say, oh yeah, by the way, there was also this. Let's do it all in one fell swoop. So I'm hoping to come back on here tomorrow and record that episode and have that for you. Monday night would be my hope. That's the plan. So we'll get on here and do that tomorrow night. But today, let's recap everything that went on in the world of Georgia athletics this weekend. The good, the bad, the ugly, mostly good. It was a really, really good weekend to be a Georgia Bulldog. It's always a great weekend to be a Georgia Bulldog, especially this past weekend. Doesn't mean it was all great. There are a few things that we don't want to have to discuss that we're going to have to talk about. But I do want to start with some good news. I think maybe the best news of the weekend, and I don't know, there's a lot of competition this weekend. There's a lot of great news. But I want to start off the top with the commitment of the number one quarterback in the country in the 2026 class. So not this current recruiting class that we're putting together, but the 2026. So this kid is a rising junior. And his name is Jared Curtis. Again, number one quarterback in the country according to the 247 composite. Number nine overall prospect in the 247 composite for that 2026 class. He's out of Nashville Christian School. And I have to be honest with you guys, I absolutely love this kid. I think he is freaking awesome. And I know what you're saying. I know what you're thinking. Tyler, don't you say that about every player that Georgia lands? Actually, no, I don't. There are certainly some players that I wax poetic about because I am that high on them. And more often than not, those guys tend to actually end up being pretty awesome. Remember Brock Bowers? I told you guys about him when he signed, when no one was really talking about him. And Brock Bowers ended up being, Brock freaking Bowers. I don't bet 1,000. But when I go out on a limb and I tell you guys that I absolutely love a player, I don't use that word lightly. In this past class, who did we talk about that I use the L word with, that I love? I love Ryan Pleglisi. As you guys know, I've waxed poetic about him many a time on this podcast over the past couple of months. Joseph Jonah-Jahnye, love the kid. You guys know that. Of course, Ellis Robinson IV, love the kid. How could you not love the kid? I'm not unique in that. Everyone loves that kid. But when I call my shot on a player and tell you that I am in love with him, I think I hit at a pretty high rate. Not 1,000. I don't bet 1,000, but I still think I hit at a pretty high rate. And I'm going to use that word. I'm going to use the love word. I love Jared Curtis. And I've liked this kid for a while. I haven't talked about him on the podcast yet because I've been trying to put together a list of, we're going to do an episode where I was going to tell you, okay, here are like the top 10 players to watch in the 2025 class. Well, Jared Curtis is not a 2025 kid. I knew that we were recruiting him. I can't sit here with a straight face and tell you I knew this was going to happen this weekend. I had no indication this was going to happen. Kind of came out of the blue. So I've been more focused on the 2025 class. And when we get through spring practice, we are going to focus a little bit more on recruiting. And I am in the process right now, bit by bit, of putting together a list of the top 10 players to know in this 2025 class as it pertains to Georgia actually going out and targeting guys. But again, Curtis is a 2026 guy. So he's been on the periphery for me, but he hasn't been a focal point because he's a full class removed from where we are right now. But I've loved the kid. When I first saw his tape, I don't know, about a month and a half or so ago, I was like, whoa, okay. But again, we're not really focused on recruiting right now, and he's a 2026 kid, so I didn't want to bring him on the show right now. But hey, now that he is on the commit list, let's go ahead and talk about this guy. So I've already told you that I love him. And for some of you, that might be already a little much for a guy who is not even a junior in high school yet. But you ain't heard nothing yet, because let me go out on an even further limb. When I'm trying to make a comp for Jared Curtis, I've heard people use Ryan Mallett as a comp, a former Arkansas quarterback who was fantastic, by the way, in college. He was a great quarterback. I mean, if we're getting that kind of guy, yeah, I'll take that all day. And I can see that. I can see that to a degree because he's a bigger guy. I totally see that comp. However, I see someone different. I think there's a better comp when I watch him play. Now, maybe this is me being a prisoner of the now in terms of like the modern context of football and who are the big quarterbacks in the NFL right now. But when I watch Jared Curtis play, hear me out, guys. Now, it's also caveat here, disclaimer, I am not telling you that Jared Curtis is going to be this guy. I'm not telling you that Jared Curtis will ultimately end up being as good as this guy that I'm about to name. But when I watch Jared Curtis play, the best comparison I can give you in terms of style of play and just build and all of those things is Josh Allen from the Buffalo Bills. When I watch Jared Curtis play, that's who jumps out to me. The very first time I watched his tape, you know, about a month and a half ago, whatever, I was like, dude, this is, at first I was like, it's Pat Mahomes, because he does like some extending plays, mobility type stuff, and just some wild off-platform things. And then the more I watch, I'm like, no. I see some Pat Mahomes in his game, but this is Josh Allen. That's who this kid is. Again, let me rephrase that. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Josh Allen. I'm not saying he is as good as Josh Allen is right now, although he is very, very good for a kid who's a rising junior. I'm just talking about in terms of how he plays the game, how he plays the quarterback position, and really just how he looks out there, how he moves out there. I see Josh Allen, like a spitting image of Josh Allen. Go watch the tape. I'm sure a lot of you have already watched the tape, and maybe you already caught that yourself. If not, now that I'm saying it, think about it. Think about what you saw. Do you see it? Do you see that comp? And if you can't remember, go back and watch tape. If you've never seen this guy before in your life, pull up his tape on Huddle and tell me you do not see Josh Allen. I defy you. Tell me you don't see Josh Allen. I don't know. Maybe I'm the crazy one. Maybe that's just me. But that is exactly who I see. I mean, it just jumps out to me. I can't help but see that. And let me explain why. All right. So those of you who've seen his tape, you get it. And look, so again, I saw his tape again for the first time, about a month and a half ago. And I saw Josh Allen then. But I mean, it's been like a month and a half. So I watch a lot of tape. I watch a lot of Huddle. I watch a lot of these young high school prospects. And oftentimes, you know, they kind of get blurred, right? You see a lot of players over a short period of time. So I pulled the tape back up when he committed on Saturday. And I was like, all right, let me just refresh my memory here. And oh yeah, yeah, no, it just reiterated everything I thought. This dude is Josh Allen. Like, that is his game. That is his style of play. So let's talk about why. Okay, first off, just from a physical build standpoint, they are built remarkably similarly. Josh Allen is what, like 6'5", 235? Jared Curtis right now, as a sophomore in high school, is 6'4", 225. And it's not just the measurables, watching them out there on the field, like just the way that they move, their body, it's the same. It's remarkably similar, very, very similar. But beyond that, he is a big dude, right? So both those guys, big dudes, they have that in common. But they are big dudes with big arms. Jared Curtis, guys, has a freaking howzer. It's like a nuclear warhead attached to his shoulder. It's out of control how much velocity this guy can get in the ball. Talk about effortless. You hear that word thrown around a lot when you talk about quarterbacks. Oh, it's just effortless how he flicks the ball. I mean, with Jared Curtis, That's exactly what it is. It is 100% just an effortless flick of the wrist. And an effortless flick of the wrist yields you a 150-mile-per-hour laser that will melt your face off if you don't catch it. It's just wild, man. Like, this dude's arm is... I haven't seen every quarterback's tape coming out of high school, but man, like, he's got the biggest arm that I have seen of any quarterback that Georgia's recruited in a long, long time. In fact, I mean, I hate to use the ever word. I hate to say ever because I don't know. There's a lot of quarterbacks I've watched over the years. I mean, it's like, dare I say Matthew Stafford-esque? I don't know. I mean, Matthew Stafford, like that is like a different level arm, but it's not far off. It's not. It's certainly not far off if it's not like right there in that same tier. And Stafford's the other guy. Remember Stafford, the way he could just like effortlessly throw a laser just with a flick of the wrist? You see that from Jared Curtis. That's what this guy is capable of from an arm power standpoint. I don't want to say arm talent. I hear that word thrown around a lot. Like, what does arm talent mean? Is that how hard you throw it? Is that how well you throw it? Is that the spiral? Is it your placements? A lot of things that can go into it. I mean, I think different people mean different things when they say arm talent. But in terms of, like, velocity, this dude is the best I've seen that we have recruited since Matthew Stafford. But as I often tell you, when you talk about quarterback play, arm strength is important. I'm not going to say it doesn't have any place in the evaluation of a quarterback. It does, but it's certainly not the top of the list for me. It's not even second, maybe even third on the list. I'm more concerned about ball placement, accuracy, ability to process, mental makeup. Those things, to me, come before arm strength. But there are certain throws, like championship-level throws, that you have to be able to make to win at a high level that you either can or you can't. Like, do you have that gift? Were you endowed by your creator with the gift of a laser arm, of that rocket launcher, to be able to make those throws? And I'm just telling y'all, Jared Curtis has been endowed by our creator with that ability. So there's two similarities right there between him and Josh Allen. Big, big dudes with big, big arms. But beyond that, there's more. He's also, like Josh Allen, deceptively mobile. Now, those of you who watch Josh Allen play, you watch the NFL. I don't watch a ton of NFL, but I watch enough. Think about before you actually watch Josh Allen play a game in the NFL. When you look at the measurables and you see how big he is out there on the field, when he like trots out there in the huddle, you don't think that guy would be mobile, right? Like, no, this guy can't really move that. What's it? He's one of those like classic statue quarterbacks. But then he starts playing, you're like, oh no, I was mistaken. This guy can move. And he's deceptively mobile like that. And that is what Jared Curtis is. When you turn the tape and you see him lined up behind center in a shotgun, you're like, well, this guy, like, he's just a classic pocket passer. No, you would be mistaken. This guy, just like Josh Allen, deceptively mobile. And it's not like functional mobility. I would classify Carson Beck as functionally mobile, where if there's like a big hole, he can pick up some yards, pick up a first down, you know, but he's not going to go, you know, for more than 10, maybe 15 yards if things are wide open. Like, he's not that kind of mobile. I think Carson is a lot more athletic than people give him credit for, but not the way that Josh Allen is. Well, Jared Curtis is mobile like Josh Allen. He runs past guys that he has no business running past at the size that he is. And he, like Josh Allen, finishes with authority. Think about how the Buffalo Bills use Josh Allen, right? Yeah, he's fast. Yeah, he can pick up yards just by outrunning people. But he can also lower his shoulder and run over people and always, almost always, finishes a run falling forward. And if you watch Jared Curtis on tape, you see the exact same thing. When he gets to the point where he's going to take contact, he is the one delivering the blow, and he is the one almost always falling forward. So they have that in common. Now let's take that mobility to the next step, all right? It's not just that they can pick up yards in the run game. It's also their ability to extend plays. Think about Josh Allen. This is where the Patrick Mahomes element kind of comes into play a little bit. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, one of the things that they are just clearly genius at is extending plays and then throwing off platform. Patrick Mahomes, I mean, he has revolutionized the game in doing that. Now, like, they're coaching kids up to do that now. Like, back in the day, it was just like, hey, man, like, you either have it or you don't. It's like backyard football. It's like Patrick Mahomes plays a big-time baseball player, right? So he kind of just has that kind of built in. Well, now you don't have to have played baseball as a quarterback to be able to do these things. So they teach you how to do it as a quarterback now. But regardless of how he developed those skills, Jared Curtis has those skills to extend plays, to just run around, like, do the oop-de-oop in the backfield, evading defender after defender, and then finally, some way, somehow, see a receiver get open and just throw the ball like completely off platform, falling down, and then just throw a rocket on a dime. All those things that you see Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes do on a routine basis in the NFL, you see Jared Curtis do on tape. Now, again, I'm not telling you he does it as well as those guys right now. I'm not telling you he is for sure going to be as good as those guys. I don't know that. The dude is 16 years old right now. All I'm telling you is that as a 16-year-old, he's already showing the ability to do some of the things, maybe not to their degree, but to do some of the things and play the way that guys like Josh Allen, mainly Josh Allen, also a little bit of Patrick Mahomes, a dash of Patrick Mahomes thrown in there with his ability to extend plays and throw off platform. And again, not just throwing off platform, but throwing off platform and delivering rockets on the money. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. He is truly irrationally elusive for a guy that size. Just like Josh Allen is irrationally elusive for a guy that size. He has no business being able to do what he does on the football field at the size that he plays at. But yet he does it effortlessly. So yeah, you kind of get what I'm saying? I love Jared Curse. And beyond the comparisons to Josh Allen, in terms of like his ability to throw the football, yes, he has a massive arm. As good of an arm as I've seen from anybody that we've recruited since Matthew Stafford, if not like right there with Matthew Stafford. But it's beyond the arm. This guy has the ability to put the ball exactly where he wants. Now, his completion percentage, I think, was like at 57% this past year. So what you see on Huddle, like, those are highlights, right? I haven't seen full games of this guy. So you have to throw that caveat in there. Now, at the high school level, you also have to understand that sometimes it's not always on the quarterback when the ball is not completed. A lot of times, the offensive line doesn't get the quarterback the time they need. And if you watch Jared Curtis play, like, that happens pretty commonly with the offensive line that he's playing behind. Receivers as well. Are they catching balls? Are they getting open? There's a lot that goes into it. But what you see in terms of his highlights on Huddle is him dropping the ball in buckets, man. Like the placement, I'm talking perfect, where you can put the ball only where your receiver can catch the ball, away from the defender, throwing on back shoulders, away from defenders. He's hitting receivers in stride to maximize their yak. I mean, he's the real deal, guys. He is the real deal. And I hesitate, I usually hesitate to say that about a kid who's a rising junior, but I'm just saying, if this guy is doing the things that he's doing right now as a sophomore, that is crazy. That is crazy. I mean, this guy has rushed for over 1,000 yards in his first two seasons playing quarterback, and he's thrown for about 5,000 yards. Now, he plays at Nashville Christian School. I'm not super familiar with the state of Tennessee's high school football. I am with Georgia high school football. Tennessee, not as familiar, so I don't know what level he's playing at. If it's like Georgia, you're talking about some of the private schools, Christian schools, if it's like a 1A thing, like the competition typically is not as great. So again, I don't know if that's the case, but if it's a parallel with Georgia, that might be reasonable to assume. So there's that, but still, the level of competition has nothing to do with his arm power, his arm strength, has nothing to do with his ability to drop the ball in a bucket, has nothing to do with his ability to extend plays and do all those things this guy does extraordinarily well. I think he is the real deal. And I think he is very deserving of the number one quarterback rating in the country. I truly believe that. Now, there's a long way to go. That's the thing here. So that's my evaluation of Jared Curtis' game and why I love this guy. Now, let's go to the other part of this. Because when I tweeted about this over the weekend, when I retweeted the commitment and shared some thoughts on social media, of course, the first thing that I get back from people, the first response I get is, well, I just hope we can keep him. Because obviously we are somewhat scarred by what happened with Dylan Raiola. Me, not so much. I told you guys when it happened, I'm still there. I do not care. I simply do not care that Dylan Raiola went to Nebraska. It doesn't even remotely affect me. I don't even think about it anymore. I haven't thought about it in a while until this happened. He committed. I was like, oh yeah, this is why you don't freak out when Dylan Raiola flips to Nebraska. I mean, that's what I tweet out. This is why you don't freak out. This is why I was not freaking out. It's not that Dylan Raiola is not a good quarterback. He is a good quarterback. He will be a good player in Nebraska. I don't know if he's going to be the guy they think he is. I think he's going to be really good. I just don't know if he's going to be like the number one quarterback in the country, like the number one draft pick that they think he's going to be there in Lincoln, which, hey, you know, we'll see, whatever. I could be wrong there. I think he's good. I just don't know if he's quite that caliber guy. But the reason I don't care that Dylan Raiola went to Nebraska and flipped is, well, number one, Ryan Pugliese. You guys know I love Ryan Pugliese. But number two, Kirby Smart is our head coach, guys. Like, more importantly, like, from a bigger picture standpoint, Kirby Smart is our head coach. You know what Kirby Smart does as a recruiter. This man is an unstoppable force on the recruiting trail. I have simply lost the ability to worry about recruiting. I am like you guys. I am a diehard Georgia fan. And what do diehard Georgia fans do? Diehard college football fans do? Well, a lot of things. One thing that we do is we avidly follow recruiting. And I have done that my entire adult life. I have followed this stuff insanely closely, like far too closely, to be honest with you. And back in the day, under Mark Richt, God bless his soul, love me some Mark Richt. To this day, we'll always love Mark Richt. I used to worry about things like this, like losing a Reuben Foster, for example, a guy like that, having him go to Alabama. Those things used to just like devastate me. Like, oh my God, like we had to have this guy. I mean, that just, it's going to completely ruin the trajectory of our program. Like we can't compete for titles now. Now, if a big time player that's on our commit list decommits and goes somewhere else, I don't even bat an eye. Why? Because under Kirby Smart, there will always be a next guy. There will always be a next man up. We have built our roster out to the point that one player here and there simply doesn't reverberate the way that it did under Mark Richt when we had a talented roster relative to the rest of the country, but not talented relative to the teams that were consistently competing for national titles like Alabama. With the talent that Kirby Smart has amassed since arriving in 2016, we are in a lot of ways insulated from having a decommitment, even a guy the caliber of Dylan Raiola, really affecting your bottom line. Again, yes, because we already have so much talent on the roster, but also, again, Kirby Smart is our head coach. This man does not rest. He is relentless. If you lose Dylan Raiola, okay, who's the next big five-star we're going to get? And you found him, Jared Curtis. I just don't worry about it. I literally never worry about recruiting. Now, there are some guys that I want us to land if they end up going somewhere else. I'm like, oh, man, that kind of sucks. I really like that guy. But I know there's always an answer. Kirby always has an answer. And history tells us that, guys. Like, I am a student of history. I love history. So when history tells me something, I listen. And the history of Kirby Smart in the Georgia program is that if we miss it on one guy, there's just the next guy away in the wings to be the next big-time five-star guy. So yeah, Jared Curtis, this commitment is exactly why I was telling you guys when Raiola decommitted that I just don't care because I know we're going to be okay. I like the guys that we have in the quarterback room right now with Gunnar Stockton and with Ryan Pleglisi, and I trust Kirby. I just simply trust Kirby. At this point, if you don't, what is wrong with you? Who hurt you? If you can't trust Kirby Smart, who can you trust? Especially when it comes to recruiting. That's what this man does. He is the unstoppable force on the recruiting trail. So yeah, that was the first thing that came to mind. Well, first off, pumped because I love this kid. And then second off, like, this is why. This is why you don't freak out when a guy like Dylan Raiola decommits. Now, yes, as many people out there on social media wanted to point out yesterday when I did tweet that out, what tells you that this guy is going to stick? Like, wake me up when he signs pen to paper. I get that. I understand that. And there is a long way to go in this kid's commitment. In fact, one of the other recruiting developments we're going to talk about here in just a minute is a case in point with that, with Justice Terry. So I don't know what the future holds with this kid. I don't know what the future holds with Jared Curtis. Will he stick to his commitment? Will he decommit and go somewhere else? I know that the best schools in the country are after this guy. Ohio State was thought to be for a while the leader for him. Like, people thought that was where he was going to go. USC, obviously, Lincoln Riley was heavily involved, and Georgia gets him, at least for now, right? At least for now. So I understand that, like, you're a little bit hesitant, especially after getting burned with Dylan Raiola. I completely understand that, and I think that's very defensible. But my response to that would be, okay, if he does end up flipping and going somewhere else, he decommits and ends up at Ohio State or USC or wherever, again, just like with Dylan Raiola, I'm not going to worry about it. Because I trust Kirby Smart. And if Jared Curtis ends up going somewhere else, there'll be another guy to take his place because Kirby never stops. And then the final part of this that I do want to touch on, because I did have quite a few people yesterday on social media reach out and ask about, okay, well, how does this affect us with Julian Lewis from Carrollton here in the state of Georgia, who reclassified, who was a 2026 kid, by the way, but reclassified. Now he is the number two quarterback in the 2025 class, like this current class right now. He's the number nine player overall, number two quarterback in this class. How does this impact our recruitment of him and our standing with Julian Lewis? And also Matt Zollers, another guy who's a top 100-ish guy. I think he's like number 104 national, 247 composite. So a fringe top 100 guy from the state of Pennsylvania who we have been very high on and we've been recruiting very, very hard. I think Bobo's been up there a couple times, Pennsylvania, to see this young man. Well, how does landing a guy like Jared Kirsch, number one quarterback in the 2026 class, how does that affect us with Lewis and or Zollers? personally for me, without knowing these kids and ever having ever talked to them, without having like direct knowledge of the recruitment, I'm not going to tell you I have direct knowledge because I don't have direct knowledge. But this is, so this is me just kind of, you know, piecing together the tea leaves here and just kind of reading between the lines. But typically, it'd be the 2026 kid whose recruitment would be impacted by what Julian Lewis and Matt Zollers do, right? That's typically how this goes down. Like, if Juju Lewis commits to Georgia, well, Jared Kerr's like, wait a minute, okay, so this guy, okay, wait, so this guy's a big-time quarterback in his own right. He's the year before me. There's not much class separation there. So do I want to maybe start looking elsewhere? It's usually the kids in the subsequent class, the class that follows that guy's class, that tend to be affected by that and might be turned off and start looking elsewhere. It's not usually the guys in the class preceding the guy that we just got a commitment from. So the 2025 kids, Lewis and Zollers, I don't think that Curtis committing in the 2026 class affects their interest in Georgia whatsoever. Personally, I could be wrong there, but that's how I look at this situation. Why would these guys be worried about the guy coming in the next class? They're the ones who will be in the program and have a head start on him. It would typically be the guy that was behind them in the 2026 class who would be turned off because he won't have the head start. Those guys will have the head start. They'll have that slight advantage on him once he gets to campus. So I don't think it affects Lewis. I don't think it affects Zollers at all. So the flip side of that is, well, what if Lewis, what if Zollers commits to Georgia? Does that affect Kirsch? Does that mean he's going to start opening up his recruitment again? I don't know for a fact. I don't know. But I have a really hard time imagining that Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo and the rest of our staff were not very open with him about how we are recruiting the 2025 class and how many quarterbacks we plan on taking in 2025 or from the transfer portal. Our coaching staff is very transparent with this kind of things. We are not trying to lie to these kids. We tell them up front. Because the last thing you want is to land a kid's commitment on false pretenses. Because eventually the truth is going to come out. And if you misguide them or strip lied to them, well, that's going to turn them off. They're going to decommit anyway. And then your program is going to get a bad reputation out there among some of the top recruits in the country as, hey, like, they're not straight up with you. Like, they're not real with you. It's not about tricking kids. It's about being honest with kids and telling them up front, hey, this is what we're doing, but we love you and we're going to have every chance in the world to come in here and compete for a job. And if they aren't about competing, then you know what? You aren't for our program anyway. You would not fit in. That's what we do at Georgia. So as far as I'm concerned, he's very aware of what we are trying to do at the quarterback position in the 2025 class. I know that he, I would assume he is very aware that we are recruiting Julian Lewis and Matt Zollers, these really highly rated quarterbacks. And he's probably very aware that one of them, or maybe both of them, probably one of them, will commit to us. And he'll have that guy ahead of him in the 2025 class. I don't think that will be a surprise to him. So if it didn't scare him off right now, and he's aware of what we are trying to do and who we are recruiting in that class at the quarterback position, why would it scare him off a year from now, a year and a half from now? I don't know why it would. So again, you never know what's going to happen. We're talking about a guy that is not going to sign anything until December of 2025. So there are certainly a ways to go in his recruitment, but I think this guy knows what he's doing. I don't think this was like a situation where Kirby Smart and staff just tricked him. Oh, we're not going to take him in 2025, so like, you're our guy. No, like that's not what happened, guys. Like, they told him, like, here's what we're doing. And he was cool with it. He's cool with it. So I just, you know, things could change. We're talking about high school kids, about 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. Things can change. But I don't think what's going to change is his perception of the depth chart at Georgia. I think he's very aware of what the depth chart is. So I'm very excited there about Jared Curtis, obviously, as I just went and talked about 25 minutes about Jared Curtis. So thrilled about that. That's off the top here. I think that was with a weekend with a lot of big news for Georgia fans. I think that was the biggest news for me in terms of like long-term potential of the Georgia football program. But let's stay on the recruiting front for one more quick moment here. As great as it was to land the Jared Curtis commitment on Saturday, we found out Sunday, wake up to the news that big-time in-state defensive lineman Justice Terry, who has been on the commit list for a while, has been a really active recruiter for us for a long time, one of the most vocal recruiters, in fact, in this 2025 class that we have already put together or are in the process of putting together. He has flipped his commitment to Southern Cal, of all places. I mean, good luck to you, buddy. Good luck to you, man. But yeah, he has flipped his commitment to USC. So the question I got when I woke up, had some DMs in my inbox, was, what happened? I mean, I think it's pretty clear what happened, guys. As far as I know, now sometimes these guys take visits that are under the radar, but oftentimes talking about a guy coming from Georgia going to USC, it's typically hard to keep that kind of visit under the radar. But as far as I know, he did visit USC this weekend. And he decommitted and flipped to USC this weekend. As far as I know, though, he had never been out there before in his life. That was his first time visiting USC, being on campus. So what does that tell me? Okay, I know they've been recruiting behind the scenes, of course, but typically guys don't flip just because you're talking to them on the phone. They usually, you know, guys go visit and visit a couple times usually. So when a guy flips on his first time out there, a couple things. Number one, big city, big lights, right? You go out there, there's a kid from Manchester, Georgia, small town, Georgia, go out there, you go to the big city, and it's like, oh my God, it's a different world, and you just get wild, man. Like, you're seeing stars out there. Oh my God, LA, let's go. And for a kid from a small town here in Georgia, like, you know, I can see the appeal. I can see the attraction of me as a guy in his late 30s. No appeal here. I cannot stand LA. Hate that place. But for a young athlete, certainly you see the appeal there. So that's part of it. You know, it kind of just makes the impression. The other part here is obviously NIL. I mean, come on, let's not bury our heads in the sand here. NIL, I don't know if I can't sit here and tell you it was the only factor that drove this flip, but it's certainly going to be heavily involved here, guys, and that's not sour grapes. I'm not saying that USC did anything wrong. That is the day and age that we live in. That's perfectly legal. We do it too, you know? So, you know, good for them, I guess. They were able to flip this guy and get a guy on the defensive side of the ball, at least for now, that they desperately need. I'm sure that's part of the sell, too. It's like, hey, man, come here and be part of the future. Like, we need you. Like, we have to have you. Georgia, they got a ton of guys like you. We don't have anyone like you. Like, you're going to be the star here. You're going to be the star in L.A., and we're going to pay you a ton of freaking money on top of it. And for, again, a young guy from Georgia, let's go, baby. I see what happened there. But let's also understand, just like if you want to say on one hand, well, let's not get too excited about Jared Curtis. I'm with you on that. I mean, I know there's a long way. I'm excited about it because I love the kid. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. But I also recognize let's not get too high because things can happen. Things have happened. Like the reality of Dylan Raiola flipping to Nebraska, again, don't really care. But just the circumstances around that, his entire family moves to the state of Georgia to Buford High School so they could be about 45 minutes away from Athens so he could get to Athens as much as he wanted to. And as vocal of a recruiter as he was for this class, as big of a linchpin as he was for the 2024 Georgia class before he decommitted, like if he could decommit, anybody can decommit. So if you want to take a commitment that has not been signed on paper with a grain of salt, I get it, man. In fact, I'm right there with you. Yes, like, just don't get too excited, but also don't get too down when a guy flips because those guys can also be flipped back. Mykel Williams is a great example. Mykel Williams, let's not forget, he was committed to USC, right? And we thought he was gone. What do? We kept plugging away, man. We kept plugging away in-state kid, and we were able to get him back in the fold, and he's a guy that's apparently built a very good relationship with Justice Terry, so I'm sure he's still going to be in his ear to some degree there. So it's not all loss. Yes, he is not on our commitment list anymore. He's on the USC commit list. That is real. That is true. He has flipped. But just like we're a long way from Jared Curtis signing, we're still not as long of a way away from Justice Terry signing, but we're still more than, 7-8 months away from Justice Terry signing. There's a long way to go in his recruitment. And again, what I said about Kirby Smart, you know, this man is relentless. He is not going to stop. We might not end up getting him. We might not be able to flip him back. I don't know. But we're not going to stop. It's not going to be for a lack of trying. So, sure, don't get too high with Jared Curtis. But if you're one of those people, well, let's take your own advice and not get too down. Apply the same logic to a guy like Justice Terry decommitting. And also, by the way, Justice Terry is an awesome, he's a really, really high-level defensive player. I mean, he's number two defensive lineman in the country. And an in-state guy at a position of need like that, which I think defensive line is the biggest position of need for us in this class. Losing a guy like that, if we do end up losing him, that does sting. I'm not going to tell you it doesn't. It does sting. You want difference makers. We need difference makers on the interior of our defensive line. He has potential to be that. But it is also a very deep year in the state of Georgia at the defensive line position. Elijah Griffin, actually, who is not on our commit list yet, I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later, he's actually the number one defensive lineman in the country, the number one and number two defensive lineman in the country in the state of Georgia this year. So if we can at least get Elijah Griffin, which right now it's looking pretty good at this moment in time, I think the crystal ball on 247 is 100%. I've been hearing some really good things behind the scenes that he's going to be coming to Georgia. We'll see. It's still recruiting. Crazy things happen. But if we can land him and get another guy or two in the fold, we'll be okay there. Even if Justice Terry does end up staying at USC. But again, that's not a done deal. That's not a done deal. It's not over until the fat lady sings. And the fat lady, man, she's not even getting warmed up yet. But all right, guys, that is the news on the recruiting front. Let's go ahead and take our first break. When we get back, we're going to dive in. We've got one more football thing to talk about, and it's not great news, probably the worst news of the weekend. But then we'll get into some more good news, because it was nothing but good news on the actual field of play this weekend when it comes to baseball, basketball, tennis, softball, you name it. The Dogs were dominating this weekend. But first, let me remind you once again about our great friends at MyBookie. March Madness was awesome this weekend, guys. I watched a ton of March Madness in between watching Georgia baseball, Georgia basketball, Georgia tennis. Tried to watch as much of it as I could because I love college basketball. I don't think it was as wild as we've seen in some years past. I mean, there was no 16 seed upsetting a 1 seed, but we still had our fair number of upsets, and it was just awesome to watch it, guys. So if you were already in on the action, I hope you enjoyed it. I know you did, but it's not too late, guys. If you've been kind of putting it off, waiting to sign up for an account, you can still do it. Now that we have almost the entire Sweet 16 field set, go ahead, get signed up for a brand new account at mybookie.ag. When you do that, use our promo code UGA, and you get a 50% bonus on top of that first deposit. You've had a chance to sit back and watch all these teams in this opening weekend. Now you know who's good. Now you know what the draws are shaping up to look like. So go ahead and call your shot with MyBookie. Get started today so you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, last bit of bad news. I hate talking about this kind of stuff. I really, really do. And I hate waking up to this. This is what I do, guys. I wake up every morning during spring practice, really during the offseason in general, especially during spring practice, I look for two things. Injuries, knock on wood, and arrest. Because that's, like, as talented as I think that we're going to be this year, I think we're going to be the best team in the country this year. What can derail that? Well, injuries like we had last year, that derailed our ability to win national title last year. And then arrest, guys getting suspended. Like, those two things. Like, we just can't have that kind of stuff. And lo and behold, you wake up this morning, not only do you see that Justice Terry is decommitted, that's not great, then you get the double whammy of transfer running back from Florida, Trevor Etienne, has been arrested for DUI and reckless driving, four misdemeanors. So I hate to use the word fortunately because I don't think that's appropriate, but at least we don't have any felonies. Felonies, I mean, he's definitely going to be suspended. With four misdemeanors, if you go on previous track record with Kirby Smart, typically, can always, you can't say always, because I know Javon Bullard had a similar situation back in 2022, he missed the Missouri game, but oftentimes, if it's misdemeanors, especially these things get pled down, guys don't miss games. So from a competitive standpoint, I'm very hopeful that's the case, especially with Branson Robinson's status still being up in the air. It seems very promising that he'll be back for fall camp, but like, what version of Branson are we getting? We still don't know that, and what we do know is that Trevor Etienne has just been like killing it this spring. This guy's a stud. Like, we know this guy's going to bring the table. And it also doesn't help that we have a legit Power 5 opponent week one in Clemson. I love playing Power 5 teams. I think that was, I wish that's all we played. You guys know that. But if you're still going to play these Little Sisters of the Poor, I still like kind of starting the season with them, because you go back to the old Rick years. Like, we always had a big-time player or two every year seemed like suspended for the first game or two. And if you open the season with one of those big-time opponents, like, well, it's like, man, you're at a disadvantage. So fortunately, Kirby Smart has a little bit of a different policy when it comes to suspending guys. Like, back in the days, like, if you sneezed in public without like blowing into a tissue in your hand, that Mark Richt was going to suspend you at the expense of the team. Kirby handles it a little bit differently, at least when it comes to misdemeanors. So I'm very hopeful this is a situation where Etienne is just going to see a lot of sunrises in Sanford Stadium around those stadium steps over the next couple of months. I hope that's going to be the case. I don't know, though. I don't know. I mean, we're talking about DUI. That's the thing, guys. Like, if he got suspended, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I don't want him to because I want him to be out there from like a competitive standpoint against Clemson because I want us to win a national title. But at some point, we also have to say, like, these kind of things can't happen. Like, DUI is, it's not something to just, like, dismiss and turn a blind eye to. I mean, you're talking about people's lives. Like, you're putting at risk. I mean, people die regularly because of people driving under the influence. That is simply not okay. What makes you think that you are more important than someone else's life? No, that is not okay. The reckless driving, not okay. I'm tired of it. But then the question becomes this: in this specific case, do you punish Trevor Etienne for the sins of previous players who have been caught for reckless driving? And obviously what happened all last summer. If you didn't punish those guys in a way that suspended them, which you really didn't, is it fair to do that to Trevor Etienne? Unless there's been a policy change internally and the players are fully aware of that. I don't know if that's the case. If that's the case, then yeah, do it. Again, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I would not have a problem with it. I would hate it because I would hate it in terms of like our ability to win that game against Clemson. I still think we'd probably be fine against Clemson. I think we're just a better team. But, you know, Trevor Etienne's a big-time player. So from a competitive standpoint, I would love to have him out there. But just from like a human standpoint, a resident of Athens, Georgia. I live in this city. If he was suspended and you want to send a message that way, I wouldn't cry about it. I would get it and I'd be okay with it. So I don't know how it's going to go. All I can tell you is based on past precedent, typically in most cases under Kirby Smart, we're talking about misdemeanor, especially first offenses with our team, you usually don't miss games. Who knows? I mean, maybe last year's issues and how that caught the national eye, and maybe that led to us making some sort of policy change internally within the program. And if that's the case, then, you know, you deal with the consequences. I don't know that, though, so just all I can do is go off what I've seen in the past. And what I've seen in the past is that he will have some internal punishment and will not love that, but will not miss a game unless there's another incident. So that's kind of where I am with that right now. All right, let's move on to some more fun stuff. That's not a fun topic. All right, we had a lot of success this weekend, man. All over the place, a diamond, the tennis courts, the courts, man, all over the place. So I'm going to try to run through as much of this as I can. I'm not going to be able, I don't have enough time to sit here and go through everything like for 30 minutes each. That's, we don't have time for that. But I do want to touch on everything that went on this weekend, guys. Give you a little recap of the weekend that was in Georgia athletics. And I want to start with the Georgia basketball team. I actually just got done watching that game before I fired up the mic. And yes, I'm sure by now all of you have seen this. We are going to the quarterfinals of the NIT, baby. Yes, we knocked off a one seed on their home court, Wake Forest. For the second time this year, we knocked off the Demon Deacs. And yeah, man, like we won two games in NIT. We've held two big first half leads. Now, we almost gave it away both times, but we didn't. We held them. We held them, which we had not really done at all this year. And now we're going to the quarterfinals in NIT where we're going to face Ohio State on the road in Columbus. If we win that game and we make it to the semifinals and the championship are going to be held this year in Hinkle Fieldhouse. I think I said that wrong last week. I thought the quarterfinals were also going to be held there. I knew in previous years, the Garden, it was the semis and it was the championship. But I thought I'd seen somewhere where it said quarterfinals were going to be held in Hinkle this year, which I thought was kind of weird. But no, that's not right. This game will be played at Ohio State in Columbus, Ohio. But if we somehow win that game, we will go to Hinkle Fieldhouse. And I would actually kind of like love to go there. Like the history of Hinkle Fieldhouse, like when am I ever going to have a chance to go see us play in Hinkle Fieldhouse ever again? And hey, Indy's great, actually. I remember going there for the national championship game. I thought Indy was a fantastic host city. So I don't know, your boy, if we get there, your boy might have to make a little trip. But I'm pumped, man. And I know I talked about this last week. We did a whole episode on Georgia making the NIT and breaking down our path to through the NIT. And I know that a lot of people were kind of poo-pooing my excitement. I was excited, genuinely excited about us making the NIT because to me, it represented another step in the right direction for our program trying to build up from the ashes that we were left in by Tom Crean. Baby steps, yes. Getting the NIT is undoubtedly, admittedly, a baby step, but still a step nonetheless. Winning a game, beating Xavier, even though we almost blew that game after having a massive lead in the second half. Another baby step in the right direction. Now going on the road, beating Wake Forest, one of four one seeds in the NIT, beating them for the second time this year. That is another step in the right direction. Like, can we just stop saying baby steps? Like, these are actual like legit steps now. I mean, this is like, we're in the quarterfinals of the NIT. I know it's the, if you want to call it the losers tournament, whatever, fine. But you know what? We got to learn to crawl before we can walk. We got to learn to walk before we can run. We're not running yet, y'all, but we're on our way. We're starting to figure out, okay, now we can move a little faster. And I honestly didn't have any expectations that we're going to win this game. Like, Wake Forest throughout the year has been a better team than we have, especially when they were at full strength. I mean, when we played them earlier in the year at home, Etton Reed had not been cleared. He wasn't playing yet. He's a really good player for them. He's their big man, their center. And that certainly helped. This game, you also have to mention here that their leading scorer, Hunter Salas, over 18 points a game, who is a fantastic player, one of the best scorers in all of college basketball. When I watch this guy play, I think he's dynamic. He did not play in this game. So there is that. But if you want to poo-poo on it and say, well, I mean, like, how impressive is it? I mean, their leading scorer wasn't playing. Well, you know what? Russell Chima wasn't playing for us. And I know Russ is, I mean, he has his limitations, and I've been frustrated with him at times, but Russ has also been very valuable for our team offensively. I'm not saying he scores big every game, but a lot of our offense runs through Russ if you actually watch us play closely. So Russ did not play in this game. Jabri Abdur-Rahim hasn't played in like 2 weeks, and he is our top shooter, at least was for most of the year until he went into a massive slump. So yeah, okay, Hunter Salas wasn't playing. That's a big-time player, but we were not at full strength either. So I don't want to hear the bad news Betty's come out and just complain, and say, oh, we didn't really deserve it. Like, it's not really progress. No. None of that. Not having it. Absolutely progress. Absolutely another step in the right direction. And we won this game because, I mean, like, we were shooting lights out in the first half. We were unconscious from three in the first half. We slowed down a little bit in the second half, but we still ended up hitting, well, I think 14 and 27 overall, like 52% from three. If we shoot like that, we're going to win a lot of basketball games. And we did. We also played good defense this game. Now, obviously, Hunter Salas not playing, there is an impact there as well. But if we can defend like we did today against Wake on the road, if we can find a way to ball that up and do that more consistently, I know obviously this year is almost over, do that more consistently the rest of this year and into next year, we might actually have something. We're going to win a lot of ball games. We held them to 39% shooting from the field, 13.6% from three, 3 of 22 from distance. And that is a team that shoots the three very well, guys. They make a living off shooting the three. And holding them to 3 of 22, yeah, that's why we won, because they can't do all that much outside. That's what they do. They shoot the three ball, and they were not hitting. And give us credit, we were running off the three line. We were contesting shots. Did a fantastic job. They put up a graphic, and I had seen something similar to this, but I couldn't remember the top of my head. So I'm pulled up right here. I took a picture of it on my phone. So yeah, so when we held teams to under 70 points this year, coming into this game, we were 14-1. This year, 27-2 in 2 years under Mike White. When we allowed more than 70 points this year, we were 4-15, 7-30 in 2 years under Mike White. Well, we held Wake Forest to 66 points, and yeah, we win games. We hold people under 70. That was the biggest issue, guys, this year. Like, yeah, we had some offensive slumps at times, but defensively, like, we just fell apart. We were defending well in the non-con, and then, like, I don't know, man. I know that the SEC slate was tough for sure. Competition raise, absolutely. But defensively, we were just like not playing connected the way we were early in the season. And that was the problem. We just simply could not get enough stops. We couldn't rebound either. Those are the two things that really killed us all year. But when we defend like that, we're a pretty good team. Not a great team, but pretty good. And we've seen that over these past two games, especially today against Wake Forest. So great effort from the guys, but still wasn't without some frustration. We did go wild with turnovers. It's actually miraculous that we won this game. If you look at the turnovers, we had 16 turnovers. Wake only turned the ball over 8 times. Like, that's how much better we shot the ball than Wake did. Like, when we turned the ball over 16 times and turned over 8, we should not win the game, typically. But we were just shooting lights out, and we were playing good defense, contesting shots, and they were not hitting shots. So we were able to overcome, like, the 2-1 turnover deficit. So that was frustrating, but hey, we still found a way to win. And the yo-yoing of RJ Melendez, like, I'm at a loss, man. I don't understand it. I don't get it. This guy played 9 minutes today. And look, I will say that Dylan James was great today, but his best game by far for us. I mean, what, he hit 4 threes today? I mean, he's got that herky-jerky 3-point shot, but they were going down today, man. He was playing good ball. He was fighting for rebounds. So I liked what I saw from him, but like 9 minutes for RJ? It's just weird. I don't get it. I just don't get it, because this guy was a big reason why we beat Xavier. I mean, he played 22 minutes, was 6 of 11 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3, 14 points in that game against Florida in our last game in the SEC tournament, scored 13 points that game, 3 of 4 from 3, Missouri 2 for 4 from 3. So, I mean, this guy is what? 7 of his last 11 from 3, played 22 minutes, 25 minutes, only 15 minutes against Missouri, but then goes back down to 9 minutes today against Wake. And I don't know, man. Again, I know that Dylan James is playing well, but 9 minutes? And look, we won. So, like, who cares? What am I complaining about? We won. I can't figure out what we do with RJ Melendez. I think he is one of the best players on the team. He's our best on-ball defender, and he is our best rebounder. He's the most athletic player that we have on the team. And we just sometimes we play him like 25 minutes, and some other times, and the last half of the season, more often than not, we play him about 10 to 15 minutes. So at this point, I just fully expect RJ Melendez to hit the portal. I think he's Portland, man. Like, I don't get it. Again, the lack of playing time, this guy can get more playing time somewhere else. So I honestly, not only would I not be surprised if he portaled out, I'm kind of expecting it at this point, which sucks. I think he's a really good player. I think he's one of the better players on the team. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get somebody else from the portal that's better than him. We'll see. We'll find out. So that one's just weird, kind of frustrating for me. But hey, we won. So I don't want to complain too much. And last thing about basketball here real quick. One thing about the NIT, every year without fail, the teams that tend to advance, when you see upsets, it's all about wanting to be there. And that's why I told you guys last week, that's why I thought maybe we could win a game or two. Because I think we want to be there. I know that we want to be there. We're playing like we want to be there. Like, I know that the tournament, NCAA tournament, is ultimately where we want to go. But for our guys, this is a step, man. Like, getting in the postseason, this is a step in the right direction for them. They want to keep playing. They want to be there. Unlike teams like Wake Forest, who were disappointed to be there. I mean, they had their eyes on the NCAA tournament. They thought they were in. They had a losing streak late in the season that knocked them out. They thought they were in for that Duke win, and they were. And then they lost some games they shouldn't have lost, and now they're not in. And, you know, a team like that's disappointing. So I'm not taking anything away from our guys, because they did play really well. They shot lights out, and Wake did not shoot well. But, you know, that's a big part of success in the NIT. Do you want to be there? And our guys want to be there. And that's helped us, I think, in these first two games. And it might help us against Ohio State. Now, Ohio State's a little bit different story. They're really, really hot right now. They got hot late in the season. They fired Chris Holtmann, their head coach, not the middle of the year, I guess the back third of the year. And then Jake Diebler, a longtime assistant coach, he steps up to the plate, and they just, like, they've hit a different stride, man. Like, he's changed the lineups a little bit, playing some guys a little bit more. And they have been playing big-time basketball. They almost beat Illinois. Like, they almost played their way in to an NCAA tournament bid. In the Big Ten tournament, they played really, really well down the stretch. So Ohio State is better than us. They're more talented than us. Do they want to be there more than we do? I don't know. I think they probably want to be there more than maybe Wake Forest did. And it's on the road. That's going to be tough. It's a lot like this Wake game. I have no expectation of us going to Columbus and winning that game. I don't expect that. Is it possible, though? Yeah, absolutely. If we shoot like we did today and we defend like we did today, like, Ohio State has some clunkers in them. They've had some clunkers this year. And, you know, like, it might take one of those for us to actually win that game and win on the road. But Ohio State, yeah, they've been playing well. They've been hot, but they've also lost some games that they should not have lost, like inexplicable losses this year. And I think we're playing well. I think we're playing with house money. I think we want to be there. We're playing hard. And I don't know. Let's go out there and just put on the line and see what happens. So, yeah, I'm excited Tuesday night. It's just great for Georgia basketball to be playing games this late into March. So I'm excited about it, man. I know not everyone out there shares those feelings, and that's fine. If you want to poo-poo it, keep poo-pooing. That's fine. If you want to live your life that way, that's cool. But I'm excited about it, and I hope a lot of you guys are as well. All right, guys, I do want to take one last quick break here before we talk to some Georgia baseball, some Georgia tennis. I want to remind you about our great friends at Alumni Hall. Speaking of Georgia baseball, that we're going to get to here in just a minute. Man, guys, the weather in Athens was amazing here this weekend. It was supposed to be rainy on Saturday, but it was not. It was gorgeous. Today was gorgeous. Friday, maybe not so much, but it was a great weekend for some Georgia baseball. It's a great weekend for some Georgia tennis. But Alumni Hall, guys, they have the best selection of Georgia baseball gear that you're going to find anywhere. They have jerseys, authentic, like, replica jerseys in every color you could possibly imagine, like red, black, gray, white. They got them all. You got polos, they've got the t-shirts, they've got Q-zips, they've got hoodies, they've got crew necks, whatever it is that you're in the market for. They got it. Trust me on that, guys. So get your Georgia baseball gear today. Come out and watch a game, guys. I know we're on the road the next two weekends. We do have a home game on Tuesday against a pretty good Mercer team. So come out when you get a chance. Support the Georgia baseball team. They are a lot of fun. They just freaking crush the ball. And when you come out, you got to be dressed right. So get your Georgia baseball gear at Alumni Hall, because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldogs shop. All right, guys, a couple more things here before we close it out today. Georgia baseball back with a bang, baby. Yeah, we got swept in our SEC opening series on the road last weekend in Lexington, Kentucky, and a lot of people quit. And, guys, I'm not going to lie to you. I had those thoughts in my head. My heart just dropped when we got swept against Kentucky, and I was like, man, this sucks. Like, What a bummer. The way we started this season, unbelievable, the non-con. We were all kind of like hesitant, like, okay, our non-con schedule wasn't like super crazy difficult. So is this team for real? Like, we did an entire episode on that. Is this team for real? And I told you, yeah, I think this team is for real. I think it's a team that can get to over 500 in the SEC. We can get to over 500 in the SEC with how we played the non-con, the record we got out to. we're a lock for the postseason. And who knows, if we win the right games, maybe can even find our way into a regional. That's a bit of a stretch, but who knows? Things are possible. And then we go into that first weekend, and not only did we get swept, we got crushed. Like, we got run ruled on Sunday. It was 12-2. It just wasn't good, man. Our bullpen just got absolutely demolished, man. It was just very disheartening. Basically, everything that we were fearful of, everything that we didn't want to speak into existence, everything that we didn't want to jinx and say out loud about how bad our bullpen was and our starting pitching, is it really that good? Well, it all came to fruition last weekend. But I got to give this team a lot of credit, man. They obviously heard the negativity. They heard the noise. They could have just thrown the towel and said, man, whatever, we suck. No, they came back with a vengeance this weekend at home against a top 10 Alabama team, at least top 10 depending on what rankings you look at. But I think they were number 8 in one of them, number 11 in one of the other ones. So a top 10-ish team, right? Who's got one of the best offenses in the country. And after how we pitched last weekend, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be a recipe for freaking disaster. No. And it wasn't great. Like, we weren't lights out on the mound, but we were much better than we were last week against a team that hits the ball better than Kentucky does. So at home, you know, that helps. And also, the Kentucky ballpark is that, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been up there. It is cavernous, man. Kentucky Proud Park is huge. It's way bigger than Foley Field. So the idea that we pitched better and gave it fewer homers this week against a much better offensive team than Kentucky in a smaller park, it's crazy, man. But we came back and came back with a vengeance, man. We swept Alabama, top 10 Alabama team. We hit 11 home runs, which is what this team has been doing all year long. That was, to me, like, I knew the pitching was what the pitching was. Now, we were worse against Kentucky throwing the ball, pitching, than we had been at any point, and worse than I thought that we would be. But I knew that our offense was going to carry this team throughout the year. And for us to only hit 4 home runs last weekend when we've been crushing the ball all year long to get out to that really great record to open the season, that was more concerning to me, because, like, I know that we don't have, like, high quality arms. Like, we don't have top shelf arms. But if we can hit the ball the way we were hitting the ball in non-con, like, that we might be able to overcome some of that and compensate for some of that. But we did not hit the ball well at all last weekend in Lexington. This weekend, though, back at home, different story. 11 home runs. Yes, our man Charlie Condon, I think, has to be the front runner for the Golden Spikes Award. Hit the 2-run jack, the absolute bomb in game 2 of the series yesterday, in the game 2 of the doubleheader. We were down 4-3 late in the game, 0-2 count, and I hope a lot of you are watching. If you weren't, I'm going to try to explain to you, like, how dramatic this was. So it's 0-2 count. On the second strike, the ball was off the plate. Condon never complains. He was pissed, though, and he had some words for the ump. He was visibly upset. And this is against Alabama's closer. This guy throws hard, man, and he's a really good pitcher. They brought him in, like, to face Condon, basically, and to get him out and to preserve the lead. So he tries to sneak a high fastball past Condon. Didn't get the ball high enough. And Condon, the 0-2 count, after being pissed at the ump for that strike two call, absolutely disintegrates the baseball. The baseball broke into a million pieces. There's no way that ball is still fully intact. He hit a freaking rocket, put it into orbit, into dead center field, over the batter's eye, well over the batter's eye. I think the final tally was 452 feet, I want to say is what it was. And that gave us the 5-4 lead, which you were able to hold on to, barely. We didn't win the game 6-5, but we held on to it. And Condon, just unbelievable. So not just hitting home runs, but, man, like, clutch home runs and just absolute moonshot, towering shots that are now in other solar systems. He now has 17 home runs in the year. He's leading the country. I mean, he's the best player in the country. He's going to be the number one pick in the draft. Any Major League Baseball executive that passes on him in this year's draft needs to be fired immediately. That's just crazy. This guy is unbelievable. Not only putting up one of the best seasons, single seasons in Georgia baseball history, he is legitimately putting up one of the best seasons in college baseball history. I mean, check the numbers, guys. That is not hyperbole. Check the numbers. It checks out. But as great as Condon has been, and he deserves all the flowers that he is getting, he is not doing it alone. One guy in particular that has come on screaming hot the past week or two is Corey Collins, who's a North Gwinnett product, been with the team for a while now, has been up and down. He's had some good moments, but he was strike out way too much the past couple years. He was not really a part of the lineup much to open the season. He hit 3 home runs this weekend, six through the course of the week, which just means he hit three home runs in the midweek game against Wofford on Tuesday. He hit two last week. So that means he's hit eight home runs in his last seven games after hitting two home runs total over the course of the team's first 18 games. He was hitting like 100 before like 2 weeks ago, before like the Kentucky series. He's now hitting almost 400. He's hit 585 over like the last 2 weeks. Somebody, he's in like the 580s over the last 2 weeks. He, talk about Enfuego. That dude is red hot. Like, that dude is straight up on fire. He's burning up right now. I mean, he's now in double-digit home runs. Slade Alford, another guy who's been great for us. He was hitting leadoff to open the season. Now Corey Conlon's hitting leadoff. Conlon's been a fixture in that two-hole. Now we got Alford hitting in that three spot. We're just crushing the ball, man. 11 home runs, which is what we've done all year. We had the best offense in the SEC. We had the most home runs in the league by a pretty good margin heading into conference play, and now we just, I mean, we jump back in the lead there after a last weekend, which was not a great weekend. It's a good Kentucky team. I don't know if it's a great Kentucky team. So we got back doing what we've been doing offensively and just crushing the baseball. But that I kind of expect based on what I saw throughout the first part of the season, the non-con slate. What was really encouraging to me this weekend was the pitching, especially the bullpen. Now, starting pitching was fine. Leighton Finley didn't have his best up, but he kind of grinded his way through that game and gave us a chance to win that second game of the doubleheader. Charlie Goldstein was great in the non-con. He's been kind of roughed up two starts in a row now. He gave up five runs. He gave up five innings, but gave up five runs in the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday and got roughed up a little bit against Kentucky last weekend as well. But he gave us a chance to stay in the game. At least he didn't give up like 10 runs, you know? I mean, I know that's what a standard there, but like that's kind of where we are right now. Just don't give up 10 runs because our offense can freaking score. But he pitched well enough. But I think the real story of the weekend for us was the effort from the bullpen, at least on Saturday when it came to the doubleheaders. We have basically really narrowed down who we trust in the bullpen. We seemingly, it seemed like we approached those first two games, the doubleheader on Saturday, like they were postseason games. Because when we took out Goldstein in that first game of the doubleheader, we brought in Brian Zeldin, who has been our closer. He's been our by far best reliever. We didn't save him for like the eighth and ninth. We brought him in the sixth inning, and the dude finished out the game. He threw four innings, no earned runs. ERA's now down to 1.32. He's a transfer from Penn. He's been the one consistent guy that we've had in the pen all year. And Wes Johnson's basically thrown up his hands and said, I don't care, man. I don't care if he's got to throw four innings, five innings. We're throwing the guy. We got to get an SEC win under our belt. We can't go 0-4 to open the season in conference play. We got to get a win. So we just rode Brian Zeldin. And we did much the same thing in game two of the doubleheader. We brought in Colton Smith, which is kind of what we've done. Colton Smith's got kind of been a co-starter. He's like, we'll start, whether it's at times it's been Goldstein, at times it's been Leighton Finley, Mrakna, whoever. But Colton Smith comes in. He's like a long reliever, right? So Finley goes, you know, four or five. I think he went five innings. Five and a third, I actually want to say. And then we bring in Colton Smith, who goes 3 2/3, dig up two earned runs, gave up one home run. Now, our bullpen got smashed with home runs last weekend. I think the Penn gave up seven home runs over three games last week. I think that's right, if I remember correctly. Well, this weekend, we only gave up two. Smith gave up one of them, but two earned runs and 3 2/3 innings, zero walks, five strikeouts. Colton Smith's got good stuff. He throws a lot of strikes, doesn't walk guys, but sometimes leaves the ball over the plate a little too much. That's why he does give a couple home runs here and there. But I think Colton Smith has like potential to be a starter. I think at some point in his career, maybe a midweek guy. But he's really good coming out of the pen like that and was able to close out that game. So Zeldin and Smith combined pitched 7 2/3 innings, two earned runs combined. And they were huge factors in us winning those two games in doubleheader, sweeping that doubleheader. And then today, Christian Mrakna started the game, went five innings, got in a lot of trouble. They were putting pressure on us, but he was able to work out of trouble, threw about 100 pitches in five innings. In fact, I don't think he made a full five. I think he got pulled at 4 2/3, I want to say. But he pitched well enough for us, only gave up one earned run, and gave us a chance. And we just crushed the baseball today, and we ended up winning that game, going away. 10-5. Now, I was concerned. We had a 6-1 lead. I was very concerned when we brought the bullpen in, because I trust Brian Zeldin. He's the one guy I like, legit trust in our bullpen. We used him up on Saturday. Colt Smith's been solid-ish for us. I kind of somewhat trust him more than the other guys in the pen. So the guys that we had left available to us today to go for the sweep, those guys got murdered last weekend in Lexington, and their ERAs were all like over 7, like just not good. Roberge, Patisak, those guys, I mean, they were getting crushed. And they didn't fare great today, but better than last week. But the difference was our offense actually picked up a slack and was able to keep extending our lead. We ended up winning 10-5. We're up 6-1. Ended up winning 10-5. They weren't great, but they got the job done. They were good enough, and that's what's going to have to be for us this year, guys. Like, our staff is going to have to be good enough. We're going to have to be better than what we were in Lexington last weekend, but if we can pitch about how we pitched this weekend, I think we can get to what I said in the SEC preview episode. I think we can get to over 500 in the league. In a league this good, that is a very, very, very strong showing, and that would absolutely put us in the postseason. I don't know if it'll be enough for a regional, get to like, if we get to like 16-14, probably not enough to host a regional. Obviously, getting in a regional is being the postseason. Hosting, that's a different story. You might need to get to like, I don't know, we might need to get to like 18-12, 17-13 to host a regional. And again, it depends on what's happening around the country. We'll see. But we do have a very tough schedule, and if we can get enough of those games against some of the top teams in the SEC, that'll give us a shot. Alabama, that's a top 10 team, guys, and we just swept them. College baseball makes no sense. We go on the road, although Kentucky is a good team. You go on the road and just get mashed by Kentucky, and they weren't ranked. You come back home, it's a top 10 Alabama team, and you do the mashing. Walk-off grand slam, actually, to win game one, 9-5, which is just unbelievable. And then, by the way, I got to mention this. Out of control. Out of control. Colby Branch getting thrown out of that game. At the very, he hits a walk-off grand slam in the ninth. Bottom of the ninth. Walk-off grand slam. Come around third base, like right before he's at home plate, throws his helmet into the air. And I guess technically there's some obscure rule saying if you throw your helmet like before you touch home plate, like that's, you get ejected, but they never enforce it. You see guys do this all the time in college baseball, and it never, ever, ever gets enforced. And talk about a sport where you see players routinely taunt the other team, taunting the other dugout. The bat flips have gotten so out of control, it's hard to even watch at times. And then you have a guy like Colby Branch, who'd hit a walk-off grand slam, and in the glee of the moment, the ecstasy of the moment, throws his helmet in the air, not at an opponent, not at an Alabama player, not the Alabama dugout, doesn't taunt anyone, doesn't look at the Alabama dugout, doesn't do anything, doesn't make any sort of gesture. He gets tossed from the game when the game's over, and which means he had to sit out. He couldn't play in game two. Just absolutely out of control. The umps were horrible in that game, in game one of the doubleheader anyway, and that was just the icing on the cake. Again, just out of control, terrible umping in that game. Just ridiculous stuff. I cannot believe I saw that happen. I mean, I know college officiating in all sports is bad, but man, sometimes it never ceases to amaze me. You would think I would have seen it all, but man, apparently not. So just had to put that out there, but great, great bounce back series. Now 3-3 in the league, which you might be saying like, well, Tyler, that's not all that great. Well, guys, you have to understand what the SEC slate is. It's a freaking gauntlet in the SEC. I mean, if you want to look at the rest of the conference right now and look at where some of these teams are in the top 10 coming into the season and coming into SEC play, what are their records right now in the SEC? Well, Florida, okay, 4-2 right there. Tennessee, top 10 team, 3-3. Vandy, top 10 team, 3-3. A&M was like a top 3 team coming into conference play. They're 3-3. LSU, top 10 team, 2-4. Alabama, top 10 team, 2-4. What's Georgia? 3-3, baby. Yeah, we got swept, but we bounced back. That was a huge series for us because we got two series on the road here coming up. We've got to go to Tennessee this weekend. That is going to be a tough series. Tennessee, they're not as good as they have been the past couple years, especially 2 years ago. Still a really good baseball team. That's going to be a tough series to get. If we can get that series at 2 out of 3, that is huge. Honestly, I'll take one. If we can get one on the road in Knoxville, I'll be happy. Call that a day. But ultimately, this Georgia baseball team is not dead yet. You thought they were. You thought they were. But we're not dead yet, y'all. A lot of baseball left to be played, and I still believe this team is going to be in the postseason. And we'll have an outside shot with the right wins to maybe possibly host a regional. And then finally, guys, I want to wrap it up here real quick with some Georgia tennis talk. You guys know I love my Georgia tennis. The men's tennis team, we've made no bones about it. They've been struggling this year. We know why. Our projected top 3 singles players all went pro, and we have a guy playing court 1 singles for us, Thomas Paulsell, who's a really good player, by the way. but he was projected probably to play about court four or five for us this year. He's had to be thrust into the court one role. He was not even in the lineup last year, and now he's playing court one. So that kind of tells you where we are. We scheduled a really difficult schedule, as we thought those three guys that went pro were going to be with us, and if they were with us, I think we might have actually gone undefeated. I think we were going to be that good. I mean, no one goes undefeated, but we might have pushed for it, guys. We were going to be that good. So we have struggled some. We've been getting better and better. We took a top 10 Texas team right to the end of that match 2 weeks ago. At home, we lost 4-3, and really we were a late break away in a third set from winning that whole thing. So we're getting better. We're playing better. We're kind of figuring things out, and this weekend we finally had some success. We kind of broke through at home. We beat LSU. We beat Arkansas. We swept this week. Actually played Citadel as well in a doubleheader today on Sunday. So that was the first time all year we've got back-to-back ACC wins. So that's huge, guys. We're getting on the right track. This is not a vintage Georgia tennis team. I'm not going to tell you it is. At no point will it be. But I do think that by the end of the year, we're going to be a very, very tough out. And we should keep winning matches, win as many as we possibly can so we can get back in the postseason. Manny Diaz has made it to the postseason every single year of his head coaching career at Georgia. And I would hate for his final year for that streak to break. I don't think that it will, because I think that we're getting much better. We're improving. Guys are getting more confident. The young guys are really growing up. We have three freshmen in our singles lineup right now. So that has been a work in progress. There have been some clear growing pains, but we are improving. We are getting better. I'm really excited to see that. We're at home next week, guys. Big home stand. We got Florida and South Carolina, two really good teams. If we can get one of those matches, it'd be awesome. But you know what? Screw that. Let's get greedy. Let's get both of them. Come out. Be loud. Be proud. Help this team. Make that a true home court edge. Because I'm telling you guys, when the McGill is rocking, it is a major advantage for our team. Our guys feed off of it, and it rattles the opposing players. Think about tennis, guys. It's a country club sport, right? You're not used to having crazy, rowdy, drunk, obnoxious Georgia fans out there going bananas, barking at you. So when we pack that place and we go crazy, it absolutely affects the opposing team, and our guys feed off of it. So come out and enjoy some great tennis. Should be great weather, and let's get two dubs, man. Let's pull some upsets, beat Florida, beat South Carolina, and let's make a little bit of a run here late in the conference season. And the other side of things, the Georgia women's tennis team just keeps on winning. We did lose the doubles point again today. We switched up our doubles lineup a little bit. We put Gigi Grant and we put Mai Nurendorn, who normally play court two doubles for us. They were on court one today. We moved Dasha Vidmanova and Icicle Mert, the freshman, down to court two. And we won our match on court two. We did not win the match on court one, and we lost on court three. So we lost a doubles point, but it's all good because we are awesome in singles. We came back, and they were no match. Where Tennessee's a good team. They're a solid team, but they are not our level. They are not on our tier, and we just took it to them in singles. We won the match 4-1. To remain undefeated in SEC play and keep a stranglehold on that top spot in the SEC. So great stuff on the tennis courts, great stuff on the diamond. Oh, Georgia softball. I keep forgetting to talk about them, guys. Terrible me. Like, Georgia softball, by the way, guys, is poised to make, like, not just get to the Women's College World Series, but actually make some legit noise when they get there. We swept Ole Miss on the road this weekend. We are still tied for first place in the SEC. We're number 5 in the country. We're 27-4 overall. This Georgia baseball team has all the pieces. We went out and got some pitching from the transfer portal. Offensively, we are dynamic. We hit the cover off the ball, led by Jada Kearney. We have all the pieces we need. Again, not just to make the College World Series, but to legit, like, go deep, make a deep run in the Women's College World Series. So I'm really excited about this Georgia softball team, and I want to throw them some love. We're going to have some big series down the road here as we get deeper into conference play, but right now, I mean, they have been nothing short of fantastic, and I do not see any reason why that would slow down as we continue through the SEC schedule. But all right, guys, that's all I got for today. A lot of stuff going on in the world of Georgia athletics this weekend. Very, very busy weekend, so I want to cover as much of it as I possibly could. I will be back tomorrow with a recap of week 2 of Georgia's spring football practice. You guys know we're going to have you covered for your football fix a little bit later this week. I typically would do it today, but with the coaches being in town and the coaches clinic, I wanted to hit up a few more sources and make sure I have a more comprehensive recap for you guys of the week that was in Georgia spring football practice. But all right, guys, I appreciate you being here. Definitely always appreciate you guys. I'm Tyler, and as always, go Dawgs!